The following is a Mediocre Movie Club production.
Welcome back to the Mediocre Movie Club podcast. I'm John Kissel, and with me tonight is Shane Sentner.
Yo.
And Brian Hartman.
That's me.
We started this this particular podcast years ago as a way to get our thoughts out about movies, about really whatever we wanted to. People were making podcasts. It didn't seem that difficult to do. And one of the things we really wanted to talk about was Deadwood. And long shot of long shots, Deadwood actually made its return as a movie on HBO. And joy of joys, we have a reason to reconvene the Ambulators.
And lace up.
and discuss the planned actual finale of the greatest act of television that's ever been put to screen.
Yeah, and we got some peaches.
And we also have some peaches. We're not going to eat them because we're not monsters.
Mom.
We're not going to smack our lips as we down this processed fruit.
No, I'm doing it.
In front of this sensitive microphone.
Dove Avatra and Dave wants me to do this.
I mean, the arc of Deadwood is moving from savagery to community. And I feel like in this moment, right now, we're going actively backwards by eating in front of a microphone.
I got the low sugar ones, so.
Oh, well, okay. I take it all back then. Everything's fine.
I would have known. I would have dug up some jarred peaches down in our pantry. Let's talk about peaches for a second.
Yeah, go ahead.
Do peaches canned at home count the same as whatever they're eating on Deadwood? Because those look like they're from a factory. But did they have peach factories?
These are great questions. I honestly don't know.
I wouldn't imagine they had canned.
Canned food?
Canned food then, right?
It looks like
I feel like the whole point of canned food is to prevent bacteria growth. I don't know that 19th century people knew what bacteria were.
I thought it was the Industrial Revolution happened and they just started doing shit and making it profit.
Maybe. I'm not sure on when Coke's postulates were preservation.
Because how else would they have peaches out there?
I don't know.
I guess jarred, the question is...
Jarred, I think... Well, jarred, same principle. Gonna, same principle.
It's not going to last long, though.
I don't know.
In a jar?
Good question.
Unless you have like a really strong guy closing the jars. So whoever Brian hires come over and close the jars for him.
Have you ever canned? I'm beginning to think you've never actually canned food before based on this conversation.
Me? Yeah. My parents certainly canned a lot of food, but I had nothing to do with any of that.
I don't know where you'd get that idea.
So initial thoughts about the Deadwood movie in which canned peaches do indeed make an appearance. Brian, what'd you think?
I loved it. I spent every minute either curious, scared for the characters, outraged about what was going on, something. It was just a roller coaster of emotions. I thought they hit the nail on the head with this one.
Shane?
That was fantastic. It was only thing I wanted was more. That's it.
How long was it?
It was a little less than 2 hours, like 110 minutes, I think.
Felt like 40 minutes. I could have just gone on and on and on.
Well, the second hour, 50 minutes, really flew by. The first hour kind of gets us setting everything up, but still, like, I looked down at the hour mark, and I was sad that I knew it was only 50 minutes left.
Yeah.
I am going to surprise myself and say that I don't know why this had to happen. I love the accidental ending. I think the accidental ending way back in 2006 is perfect. I think they backed their way into the exact right exclamation, or not exclamation point, but ellipsis to put on the series, both from a historical perspective and from a character perspective, and it's fairly unimpeachable. Like it's up there with the Sopranos for me as far as like series ending, or The Americans as far as series ending television shows go. So, from that height, this follow-up could really only disappoint, and I kind of think it did.
When you're going from, this is like going from an A+ to an A, or what are you talking here? I mean, my expectations were high, and it met or exceeded them. I wasn't.
I expected to just be in a constant state of mess while I was watching this. While I was watching this, and there were moments where, I'm choking back tears, and at very tiny, minuscule, blink and you miss it type moments as well. This is obviously a movie that was made by the people that are intimately involved with the source material. Like, they remember tiny, tiny details that work for someone like me who has seen the show many, many times and has internalized every syllable and inflection in the dialogue. But the plot itself, I don't think it fit. I don't think it fit with the Deadwood that I spent all that time with.
Well, I mean, the telephone poles are coming. It's a different Deadwood. It's not the same place.
As opposed to the telegraph poles.
I'm with Brian. I feel like it's an evolution of Community. And
yeah, I mean, it's not the Wild West anymore.
Right.
I mean, it is a little bit, but it was the battle, which I think is what they were going for, with the whole telephone pole thing. Yeah, it's the transition time.
People come together. They don't always have to separate. Like,
people come together to beat up a U.S. senator in the thoroughfare. As the Community is on the cusp of statehood, it's far more aggressive action towards Hearst than when the town was actually a lawless Wild West frontier town.
Well, it's because Hearst could do whatever he wanted then. It was lawless. He obviously...
He can still do whatever he wants.
Obviously not. Because there are rules. He brings in marshals from another jurisdiction, and Bullock's like, yeah, dudes.
I don't really agree with that framing of history. It's not consolidation that helps the little guy necessarily. It's not bringing smaller entities into the larger entity that necessarily helps the smaller entity. That's more like that's growing monopoly of political power.
Aren't you a fan?
Versus a representation.
Aren't you a fan of the French Revolution? Fucking decapitate these motherfuckers.
No, that went badly. There are two French Revolutions. The first one was good and right, and the second one was a bloodbath.
Yeah.
I think I didn't necessarily look at it politically as much as spend 10 people are coming and going when we first watch the season. And this is 10 years later, and these people have homes and have lived there. And think about, I don't know, first time you met Shane, and then 10 years later, when are you more willing to fight for him?
What's at stake for the townspeople is less. Yes, they are established, and they're not necessarily going to be burned out by Hearst. Like, it was a reasonable possibility that he and his goons would just destroy the whole camp, which is what he wanted. And he was dissuaded from doing that in the series. So he is less powerful in the movie, but for him to be so thoroughly defeated did not feel true to the show. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
the movie leaves with him in jail.
Yeah, I mean,
and we're not doing this again. There will not be another one of these.
Right,
I think there is
right.
absolutely no way.
It leaves them in jail, but also the only witness is going to die, and that's it.
Unknown.
He's gonna get off.
He might die. He might be fine.
So I don't know. I have no problem with this because it is the evolution of Community to rally around each other. That's it. Hearst is the outsider. They killed someone who is by all accounts nice to everybody in camp. So
not unlike Ellsworth. Who,
right, but they didn't have
not unlike the Cornish organizers.
But they also didn't all know Ellsworth. Like, they've known Charlie Utter for 10 years. Charlie Utter's one of them.
Ellsworth was one of them.
Kind of. He's also the rich guy at that point.
He was one of them who made good.
They also,
except for
Hearst
could have
rules
brought.
Now.
He could have brought in an army 10 years ago. He could have hired a bunch of people and brought everybody in and burned the town to the ground. He cannot do that now.
Yes.
It's the illusion of power.
I think
the
movie contrives Hearst being sloppy in a way that he probably would have put more thought into his plan. It requires him to be very stupid. It requires E.D. to have a series of spy channels within his hotel, which, all right, fine. I don't necessarily disagree with that.
I thought that was hilarious.
But that Hearst, as a senator, would meet with these two goons. When he has nameless dudes around him who are ready to shoot down these assassins they start tattling.
I think that's a good tell that he's trying to separate himself from everything, though. Like, he has to play it safer than what he did before.
Then you should get one of those goons to hire someone who will then hires the... It seems very dumb.
Well, the fucking part. Irish are a bunch of illiterates.
It makes sense. Like, Hurst can go straight at a thing in the wildest, in the lawless frontier.
Can't hire anyone else for you, Hurst. I cannot fucking read. How am I supposed to communicate with him?
See, I took this time around.
And the show is asking us to believe that he's personally contracting killers to murder a guy in broad daylight and not even make it look like it could be an accident, a la Bron Garrett. Al Swearengen is a more crafty murderer than, again, a U.S. senator, who the show has gone out of its way to demonstrate how out of Al's depth he is when he goes up against Hurst. The best you can do is just eke out survival and some kind of surrender on, like, 10% of your own terms.
I took this time as Hurst is more full of hubris. You know, he runs countless mines. He's elected to the Senate, you know, and I think there reaches a point in power where you're just willing to say stuff. I mean, you look at our friggin' president is recorded saying countless things when he's more powerful than when he was, you know, much younger. Doesn't seem out of step with how politicians feel about their place in the world.
I just have quibbles with various motivations and plot exigencies that are about the format more than maybe some of the bigger details. I don't know. We're going to revisit. But, like, big themes in the movie, Milch has had 10 years to think about, 13 years to think about what he wanted to put in that final season. Or whatever final form that the planned ending of Deadwood would take, and there's some, I think, personal stuff in there. Absolutely, with Al decompensating throughout the 3-4 days that the movie takes place over. Milch, of course, has Alzheimer's and is decompensating as well. By no means was he incapacitated during the filming and the writing of the movie, but, you know, day by day, he's going down a very specific and inevitable path, as we all are, but he can see the end more than most. I mean, we've seen Al on the outs, somewhat, like, neutered from the goings-on of the camp, and, like, in the second season with the kidney stones. It's not my favorite version of Al, but that's, you know, that's fine. I think that Milch very much wanted to have someone who was vital and powerful being himself and then looking jaundiced and being sung to by his gimp maid. So that's all. It wasn't going to be anybody but Al, so that's all well and good. There's, again, the show revisiting more season 2 plot points with the telegraph poles. Now it's the telephone poles. This very much seems like an old man yelling at cloud. I don't say this negatively, necessarily, but less so since late 2016, but there is this sense that, like, progress is inevitable, it's going forward, and history is a straight line towards more equity and more justice and so on and so forth. But people have to make that happen. It's not just the way it's going to go. Like, Hearst very much buys into that with him as an avatar of progress, but people don't always want that. Speaking of the French Revolution, we can talk about looms a whole bunch in English linen, if we really wanted to. I kind of do. I'm gonna abstain.
Okay.
But the people of Deadwood are very much, things are good now. Change may very well be bad for me, especially if the representative of change is someone like Hurst, who has factually been bad for the town.
Maybe they're all mad at Hurst for being a gentrifier.
I mean, if anybody's a gentrifier, it's Bullock. Like, he built that giant house with the creek. Like, he was one of the first ones to do so.
Yeah, well,
so he set the standard. Well, whereas there used to be holes in the ground and tents.
You would think that, but he has a mustache and he was the first to do it, so he's a hipster, which is cool. The people after the first people are gentrifiers, which are lame.
Okay, I feel like
John. I don't think the technology thing applies to everyone. I think you heard Al talk about it. And maybe other business people, but when they showed the queue for the phone, I mean, it was 30 people deep.
Yeah, I think like the movie is coming that like from the side, like Al and Charlie and other characters may not necessarily want this progress, but other people do. But they are the titans. They're the ones eating the peaches. They're the ones. They're
yeah,
the
but
town
they're also
pulled into meetings.
You know, they're 50, 60 years old at this point. This is that's not representative of the bulk of the people. It's representative of the people who go
vote.
The
powerful, yeah.
Yeah.
The people become more conservative, certainly, as they get older.
I mean, 100%.
And hence the old man shaking his fist at Cloud.
I mean, there's that, and there's also, you know, they're the ones in power, and a telephone is decentralizing that power away from them.
Yes.
Just like power is taken away from Hearst as well. So, yeah, the train's just going to fucking keep chugging along and run you over.
Yeah. I guess Hearst wants the telephone lines there because his mind is still operating. I feel like anybody could have been the avatar of the specific brand of progress. It didn't have to be Hearst.
I don't disagree with that. And I guess, you know, I don't really know where we're going agenda.
I wish
but
what brought him to town was something more than, I would like this string of telephone poles here, please.
Well, it
because
was
many people
it was.
Would want that.
It was
statehood.
That was the ornamental reason. But the actual reason is because he wanted to buy Charlie's land and finish this line of telephone poles.
I think the actual reason is
because wrong with that?
Certain.
What's wrong with that? I wish it was more nefarious is the wrong word because it's not hard to make Hearst the bad guy. But the actual wanting of telephone poles in the show's or in the movie's telling is not good because Bullock, the most ramrod straight character, it is burning the telephone
I don't think that had anything to do with the telephone poles.
Those,
I think
it's directly connected. It's
if those are anyone else's
Charlie
poles.
Is an obstacle. Charlie defines himself as an obstacle. He wants to be an obstacle.
Yeah. I mean, Bullock
he wants to be an obstacle to the telephone poles, and in the absence of being able to go straight at Hearst, Bullock goes for the telephone poles, the representation of continuing progress to Deadwood.
I thought that was more of a strike at fuck you, Hearst. Like, you can't push us around anymore.
I think you're reading too much into this one.
I don't think such a thing has ever been said about Deadwood. You can read into it indefinitely.
This is exactly why Brian and I liked it more than you did, because I'm not reading any of this at all. Like, we're at
Bullock, as a U.S. Marshal, lighting a pile of lumber on fire that Hearst is just going to keep bringing into town until telephone poles are built.
Sure.
Is stupid and childish.
It made him feel better.
It's
not making him feel better.
It's not. The guy just murdered somebody and was trying to get away with it, and that's Bullock's signal to say, hey, you're not going to get fucking away with this.
Yeah.
And because, again, another theme of this movie is these characters that haven't been around in 10 years, specifically for Bullock, like Alma, like Hearst, in that intervening period, like he's become a marshal again. He has developed a true relationship with his wife, with Martha. He's had 3 children. The angry days are over. The angry days were silly. The angry days were primal. It's no longer those days. Those days are over.
Angry Bullock.
And the show is the movie is pushing him by reintroducing these characters, pushing him towards re-engaging with that anger.
Right. Angry Bullock punches Hearst in the face, grabs him by the ear or whatever. Measured Bullock goes and lights the shit on fire. So guess what? Fuck you, man. Like, it's not going to be easy. You're not going to... Like, civil disobedience, man.
Civil disobedience is not the destruction of property.
Fuck you, cop.
It's not. It's not.
Kissel's a cop now. That's it.
I'm not on her side, obviously.
No,
but
no.
Hearst is made into like a
Brian.
I'm
looking at
easy.
John right now, and he has a George Hearst tattoo on his forearm.
I think you meant to say forehead.
No, I was imagining like a Popeye tattoo on your forearm. Yeah, he's also only been lifting his forearms.
Yeah,
too, like,
on my forearm, I'm having a conversation you cannot hear. Personal hero, George Hearst. I don't consider it to be like a fist pump moment. Like, I think the movie wants you to think when Bullock lights the lumber on fire. It's a futile, childish gesture.
I don't think
he's
the movie
going
wants that
to
at all.
Send a
I thought the movie just wanted us to show that it's on. Like something is it's big this time.
Yeah.
Big things are happening, and again, Bullock is mad, again, fighting back.
His anger in the finale, the accidental finale, all that he can do is tell Hearst to leave as he's already leaving. His anger doesn't get him anywhere. It's useless.
And guess what wasn't
and
useless?
Even if he didn't have the anger, there was still nothing he could do.
What was
that? That was good.
Setting that shit on fire was not useless.
It absolutely was. He's just gonna order more.
It's going to be harder.
He just wasted all those trees.
It's going to be harder.
What about tree lives? Tree lives matter.
Oh God, Kissel's gone full cop.
Kissel's full cop. Oh man, yeah. It's on. Like, if I could like something of Kissel's on fire right
now. Always contributing to climate change.
I'm looking at the computer. Kissel is now looking up clocks. I don't know what's happening here.
I'm worried for the safety. I'm worried for my safety and the safety of my family.
There could be Antifa around.
You never know. Yeah.
Are you done being a cop, Kissel?
Maybe. We'll see.
Oh, man. Yeah. I believe the first line of Ambulators, our Ambulators Creed, was no one here is a cop, right?
just out on a stroll, on patrol, swinging my billy club. I can ambulate just like the rest of you guys.
Wow. We heel turn. Fucking Kissel and Harry Manning.
Okay. One more quick theme before I ably segue into the next part.
I doubt it'll
Doc
be better segue.
Has a brief description of life, of his interpretation of life as cells all the way down. The original plan for the Deadwood credits, opening credits instead of the horse running into town, was a series of bugs amassing into larger and larger structures and organizations.
Oh, I thought you'd be like those rats and the king rats in New York City with all the tails.
Sure, rat kings.
Rat kings.
I mean, maybe. I don't know how the credits would have evolved as the series went on. But this is something that Milch is very symbolically and visually he's interested in. Just the aggregation of affection that binds individuals into greater and greater levels of organization. That's the show.
Yeah.
Then just Doc got to give a thesis statement.
Always yeah, it was great. Sometimes it was great. I feel like that's exactly what Brian and I were just talking about. And you're like, nah.
The show is not historical in any way. I don't know what the real Hearst did to consolidate the Homestake Mine in Deadwood. I have no idea. But what is true is that he didn't languish in a South Dakota jail cell as a senator. He amassed more and more power, and his son became arguably more powerful than he did. So it's one thing to make a titan of industry into an ahistorical villain. If you can like craft a believable and recognizable philosophy out of him, as the show very much did with Hearst, the boy the earth talks to. It's another thing to construct this villain as a straw man and then burn him down for some kind of cathartic moment that the show never has needed to be great. And that gets us into Deadwood as a standalone movie, which I think is what is most irritating me. Because somewhere along the line, either Milch himself or HBO people had to spare a thought for the very strange idea that someone would watch this having not seen any Deadwood before. Hence the flashbacks, hence the distilling of the plot down to as momentous as I think it's ever been. Like, within the course of these 3 days, there's a birth, a funeral, and a wedding, to say nothing of a lot of public gunplay and assassinations. In a town that is 13 years removed from its actual Wild West days, it's on the cusp of statehood, things have presumably calmed down. So I think that pitch for those viewers, however small their number may have been, somewhat hamstrung the movie. What do you guys think?
I think we got to stop talking about Hearst for a second, first of all. Second of all, I thought the flashbacks were dumb. That was like the only part I really didn't like.
Some support.
I liked most of flashbacks. I assume there's also most people haven't watched this show as much as we have. So
no, I've only seen it once. Like, the flashbacks helped jog my memory. I didn't necessarily need them. But those flashbacks aren't necessarily for people who have never seen the show. I think it's for people who watched it one time, I don't know, whenever it first came out, because I just finished it and I had forgotten a bunch of stuff. So when this would come out, 2005?
2006.
Yeah, so we're at like 13 years later. It's not necessarily, it's hard to say, you know, it's only for people who are new to the show. I think it's, you know, pulling some people back in who have been long gone. That's fine.
I think they could have solved that by doing like a previously on. Like, this isn't going to go for Oscars. It's going to go for Emmys. Like, everybody understands it's a TV movie and the parameters are changed. You can't do a previously on for a movie, for like a Marvel movie, even though it's essentially a TV show at this point. You absolutely can do it for a movie that is airing on a TV network that is the summation of a TV series. I don't think, like...
Maybe Milch tried it when they cut it together and he just liked this way better. I mean, it didn't take me out of the show. They were so short. It showed age. It showed how much everyone had aged, which was nice.
Yeah.
They weren't messing around with making people older, much, much older.
I think Kissel and I talked about this the other day. I've seen so many times that I know all the plot and I get what people are saying. So it was kind of a challenge to go back in with fresh dialogue and trying to catch up in a couple scenes.
Yes.
The flashbacks are almost a break, almost a timeout.
And to the show's credit, they got an HBO house director who was involved with Deadwood as well, Dan Minahan. I think he had done several episodes. I can't tell you exactly which ones, but they at a minimum try and somewhat artfully integrate them into the movie with like mirror shots or characters in the same positions. They try and create a sensation of sense memory to where the characters are actually experiencing these flashbacks instead of them just being naked plays for the audience's attention.
Right.
They were all like nestled after lines very neatly. It was like a line is said that, you know, was about that time and it instantly goes to that. The more you talk about it, the more I'm okay with them.
It's not like a deal breaker by any means, but it does. To me, it's indicative of this individual work as a movie instead of part of a TV series. If this was a standalone thing somehow and it had to introduce all these characters, I would probably still watch because David Milch is a genius and these actors are incredible. But I mean, I'm coming at it as a devoted watcher of the series. The show's not ignoring people like me, but this like allowance to more casual viewers, which again, I don't understand how you could be a casual viewer of Deadwood.
But I've only seen it once. I'm not necessarily a casual viewer based on my love for it, but I feel like John's old man yelling at Cloud right now for people who didn't watch the series 10 times.
The idea that you would watch this show and like be on your phone while it's going on, that makes no sense to me. That seems utterly impossible. You couldn't be playing Civilization VI and watching Deadwood. That would not work.
I would like to...
Because Civilization VI was Civilization III, and everyone was playing Snake on their phone in 2005.
I want to hear a review from somebody who's never seen the series at all. I'm curious how this plays out. I think it's impossible for us to really review it as just a standalone movie.
Yes. And another way that the show is trying to bridge that gap is with the young prostitute character whose name I don't remember. Did not like that.
Charlotte Goodwin.
I really didn't like that character
like
at all.
Neither did I.
I thought that was bad. And I think she was only in it as some kind of audience surrogate to get Johnny talking about Jen. Her scene with Al is creepy in a way that the show has never been creepy when it comes to Al.
Was it?
I thought it was creepy.
Him turning on her advances?
Yes, and she's saying, "Boy, you sure remind me of my dad."
Yeah.
I don't know, guys. I don't know if that was the best line to put in that person's mouth.
I mean,
I didn't like that Trixie took a shining to her. Trixie, who doesn't take a shine to anyone.
Right. It was weird. I think that was the weirdest choice. I thought, honestly, that was weird. I thought it was going to be some sort of payoff as she was there Infiltrate, maybe. I don't know. Like, to break up some power somewhere, or yeah, some relation, something. Yeah, like I don't understand.
I think it's some things never change. Like, we didn't necessarily, I don't know, we didn't see Trixie introduced and what her, you know, being 18 or 19 or whatever was, but for her in South Dakota. I thought her interaction with Al was like creepy old manish or like scarred young girlish, but I don't think it was out of place for a prostitute riding a train to South Dakota in 1882.
Yeah, I think it's that to me. So it's like twofold for me. It's like, it's one, that we're spending all this time with a character that I'm not invested in, and I had zero interest in getting to know when I want as much screen time with the people I like. And two, is she had a moment with so many different characters.
It was just
a strange credulity, like that she's going to be the one who's going to have a talk with Al. Like, I like Al taking to a shining to her or having that moment with her. Like, said, okay, Al's obviously changed, but then we have it with Trixie, and then we have it with Johnny. Yeah, so it's like she's
Sophia. She's good much with Sophia.
Yeah, And when Kissel the cop says snowflakes, he's talking about actual snowflakes, not just liberals.
Talking about frozen water. I mean, of all the interactions that the movie could have provided me with, Johnny and this new character, I wanted Aunt Lou is like 30th on the call sheet, and I wanted more time with Aunt Lou. There were characters that weren't around, whether because they just weren't available or because Milch couldn't find a place for them in the script, whatever. But I wanted more of Blazanov. Where's Blazanov at? Where's Hawkeye at? Where's the half a guy who's good with a knife in the finale?
Yeah, give me that guy.
That character had more lines than Con Stapleton, which is a travesty. Like, what kind of show are we watching?
I don't know why it's so bad to introduce a new character. It's not unnecessary. It's a new character. That's okay. New people move into town.
Yeah, I just thought she was
a crisis.
Get too close to everyone too quickly. And maybe she works out better over a season, you know, where she actually slowly gets introduced to characters. But just to come into town, know all these major players immediately seems weird and out of place.
Yeah, I don't think we're getting anything new out of her specific path. Like, we've had young prostitutes on the show before, and we've gone down this path of.
You're talking about Deadwood, not us, not our show, not our podcast. You're talking about Deadwood, okay.
Let's say, I'm just going to try to make one bad analogy before we can move on. If a, you know, good-looking 21-year-old girl shows up at the fraternity house when we're in college, how many people does she get to know pretty fast? Like, this isn't out of the realm of impossible.
I mean, what else is going on? Is Riley having a baby and is Bobby getting married and is our arch nemesis showing up after a period of time where he murdered our friend? Because if that's all the case...
And ripped the letters off of our fence?
Yeah.
Jesus.
I don't think any of those things would matter if a good-looking 21-year-old shows up at a fraternity house. You've met men before. This is like, well, what's on the on your mind all the time.
To poke into your analogy there, the already entrenched lady at the fraternity house would not take her under her wing.
Yes, like, this is our actual like experience.
Trixie would. This is our actual I've seen that, experience yeah.
where the hangers-on, invited or not, just deciding that they're hangers-on, are actively chasing women out of.
Yes.
Out of the house.
100%.
So that's Trixie. So this is going to bring us to our first celebrated fireworks going off, parade marching down the street, Cruel Masquerade is back. Brian, you're going to be playing Hurst in this interaction, and I'm going to be playing Charlie fucking Utter. So you're going to lead us off whenever you go through your motions, go through your exercises, and You know, you just let me know. You can start whenever.
All right, here we go. These placer acres that you own, Mr. Utter, captured my attention.
Scouts you sent previous made that clear.
People whose judgment I respect assay this property's market value at $3,500.
Seems I'm the lone holdout on the path of progress.
By way of abbreviating our back and forth and maybe generating some goodwill, I'd go 500 above, offer you 4,000 even cash money.
My father taught his boy, be hell into him might maybe be more accurate. How if early on you credited the settlements was coming, bought acres reasonable, developed them sensible, hung on to them till the market come right, of a day you might could wake and find you made yourself a respectable investment.
Forward thinking was your father then, and now here's his boy to confirm his papa's prediction.
Contrary wise, man might come to certain feelings, partial say to a piece of ground, a river bending through the forest like so. I decline your offer, Mr. Hurst, thanking you for your time and attention.
My experience over time has come to be customarily, I am he who starts a negotiation, names its finish too.
Maybe get motherfucked this morning in the thoroughfare. By a woman in the bargain has somewhat got your back up. Not the accolade you looked for out your return to fucking camp.
Proffering that assessment, sir, is hardly your proper bailiwick.
As far as that, I wouldn't proffer it any fucking way.
Bravo, guys. Bravo.
Great scene, great scene. I accept my bouquet of roses. Brian, yours is in the mail. So just keep an eye out for that. Don't let those go dry.
We're sending it in a jar so your wife can open them for you.
That scene, great representation of the vulgarity on Deadwood. Charlie doesn't start saying his curse words until Hurst changes the tone of the conversation from cordial and commercial into threatening. David Milch knows what he's doing.
Fantastic.
It's not just, to quote Ian McShane, a wrong fuck in the wrong... One wrong fuck and you're fucked, something like that. I'm paraphrasing, I'm not quoting.
Pardon my French here, but I don't ever think I've seen motherfucked in the past tense like that before.
All right, yeah.
When he said that, I thought, oh, that was clever.
It's a verb.
Yeah. That's what my old boss at the Braves would just be like, there's all of our employees are downstairs in the hot sun motherfucking us right now. So, yeah.
But did he ever say it in the past tense?
I don't know if he said that. I think I have. But
how about future tense? Will be motherfucker.
I've never heard that. You're going to get motherfucker.
Our employees will motherfuck us tomorrow.
Yeah. It's good. It's a good verb.
This is the level.
Past participle have been.
They have been motherfucked.
So Deadwood movie as part of a continuing story. This is where the movie is most successful to me, the long-term, hardcore, all-timer fan. Just a little grace notes that would potentially be lost down on the person who is just sitting down to watch the movie. Again, I doubt that person exists. They probably do. I don't know.
I want to meet them. I seriously want to talk about this.
Yeah, who would do that? That would be like sitting down to watch the Game of Thrones finale and having seen nothing else. Like, the show is terrible, and I have no reason to go back and watch it now. So I'm just going to run down the bulleted list of moments that variously made me tear up. Wu's grandson.
New character. Get him out of here.
Well, hang on. Wu's grandson, not his son, I think that is hugely important and indicative of how Milch views America and specifically the American immigrant experience. Like, it would be totally fine and reasonable for Wu to have a 10-year-old kid, frankly, at any point in his life based on his position in the community. For him to have a grandson means that it's a single word, it's a single aside from Swearegen that fleshes out Wu's entire backstory. He came over from China probably by himself, he probably left his family behind, and then at a certain point when he determined that he was established and it was safe to bring them there, he did. and whether his grandson was born in America or not, he is fully American in the sense that he understands how to operate with people. He speaks English, and he's going to be a full citizen here shortly.
I think it was a little too on the nose when he said these colors don't run.
Yeah, as long as I want forehead tattoos. Yeah, he's got the flag with like 30-something stars on it. I don't know how many states there were in the 1880s.
A thin blue line in the middle.
I loved that. I fucking loved that.
I was going to tell Shane not to make cop jokes.
I think it was,
yeah, not my presence. Yes,
yeah. I think we've passed that up already tonight.
I'm just going to go on and on about a single throwaway line. Charlie, in our previous scene, waxing poetic about the stream that, you know, 15 years ago, white people would have had nothing to do with. The Sioux and the Cree and whoever else were in this Dakota territory, on their sacred land of the Black Hills, their ancestral lands, the army chased them all away just because there were rocks in the ground. And Charlie's admiration for this creek is tainted by that fundamental crime. But like Wu's not committing those crimes. It's the immigrants that like absolve the original sin of America. And Milch fucking gets that. And God damn it. I love that. This tiny little stroke. Like he thought about it. He thought about it long enough to not have that kid be Wu's son. And great. A plus. next bulleted point. Joni speaking at Charlie's funeral, like of all the characters that could have said a word in that moment, like Jane is being like a hype man in the background, sure, but like the relationship between Charlie and Joni is just pure and beautiful and elemental. Did they speak before Charlie got killed in the movie? I can't remember. I don't think he did.
Call that,
but... I don't think he did, but... Again, if you're that person who was just watching this movie for the first time, you have no sense of their backstory, but that was one of my favorite relationships on the show, Joni and Charlie. Loved it. Towards the end of the movie, Bullock just stepping in the creek in front of his house, as Andy Crane did when William Bullock was being buried, or when he was having his funeral. Jesus Christ. Jesus fucking Christ, that worked. Holy shit, did that work on me. And again, it's a frame. It's a goddamn frame. Charlie's obsession with manners, fantastic. And that it's his assassins, his eventual assassins that are the offending party. Takes you back to Charlie asking if it would be better if he exhaled out of his ass when Wolcott stomped on his foot. Or didn't. He probably didn't. He was just starting a fight. The close relationship, like arguably inappropriate between Alma and Sophia, to where Sophia is like a confidant of Alma's, but that harkens back to that same episode where William Bullock was killed, or when William Bullock had his funeral, where they have their discussion when Sophia is like 5 or 6 years old, like, trust me with your sadness and I'll trust you with mine, and it's like it's emotional honesty between mother and daughter in a way that probably didn't happen a whole lot in the 19th century, Victorian era and all that, but it's just perfect. It's just a perfect remembrance of who those characters were and where they were left. And finally, Trixie saying, I'll be good, after she's gone into labor. She's saying it to God, but she used to say that to Al, like in the pilot. And Al was essentially her god, and she's come a long way since then. Al has as well. Our member Tom Topper recently started Deadwood, and he was talking about on our private Facebook page the scene where Al euthanizes the Reverend, and I called it a heel face or a heel face turn in a way that has rarely been pulled off, if ever, in TV. And Al was just such a fucking heel in that pilot, and that he was able to come so far, and Trixie was able to come so far too. Yeah. God damn it, I fucking love Deadwood. I'm out of bullet points. Any small grace notes that really just tickled your heart?
There's just so many consistencies throughout. I mean, I don't want to call it fan service. They have the peaches all lined out across the table.
I mean, they would.
But, I mean, of course they would. Yeah. So it's just like all the little touches. They took time. They took care to do things right if they're going to do this.
Two thoughts. The one note I took was after you get off the train and you go into the bar and everybody is sitting and leaning at the bar the same way that they always have, like my heart went pitter-patter and I thought, oh, this is going to be good. Like everything's the same. Well, not the same, but you know, it's been well done. And coming off of the Game of Thrones finale, where it's like everything was just thrown at the screen, you could see in this one, like everything had been meticulously planned and thought out about where everyone is located and what everyone is saying. And it was a relief. And by the end, I felt like I didn't necessarily have any teary moments, but at the end I thought that was emotionally draining, having spent, you know, however long we did talking about this show for hours on end.
I thought I was just going to be a blubbering mess the entire time, and I kept it together. I was somewhat surprised the level I kept it together. That's not on me trying to not cry around people. I did watch this with Shane and Blair, but I was surprised that it fucking worked on me. Make no mistake. I thought it was going to work a little more, and I think some of that is the aforementioned like plot problems that I had. But this is part of the praise section, not the Barry section. Who was missing? Who got short shrift? Dan Doherty, the actor that plays him, W. Earl Brown, who was really been one of the cheerleaders ever since it went off the air in 2006. He was on Twitter today talking about a long, like, 2-3-page conversation that he had with, I want to say, Trixie that got cut. Johnny got more lines than him. What's-her-face, new character, got more lines than him. He really felt the most underserved by the movie. I'm not saying that Dan would be left the gem. I'm saying that he might have opinions on what should happen to it after Al goes, and Al is dead by the end.
I mean, you have all this history with Hearst and him gouging Hearst's main dude's eye out.
Yeah.
And you barely get the interaction. You know, like, they're just, Dan just doesn't have the emotional punch in this that he normally does by being Al's number one cheerleader, but also super sensitive, but also murders Brom Garrett.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in Dan Doherty. He's also very childlike. He's quick to tears, despite his size and the violence that he routinely doles out. I wanted to know about that woman who wouldn't ride a horse. Never got to see her. That would have been a fine new character. Silas Adams is missing altogether. Titus Welliver just couldn't. He was making Bosch. So I'm sure he's super happy about that he missed out on the Deadwood movie for Bosch. I don't know what Bosch is, but I think it's fair to assume that it's no Deadwood.
Is that Amazon?
Yeah,
it is Amazon.
I want to say like detective lawyer show. I'm not exactly certain. Truly disappointing. I feel bad for Titus Welliver. Aunt Lou, just around. I like that. I really like Aunt Lou. I think we didn't get a lot of Aunt Lou because Richardson is dead. That sucks for Aunt Lou that this very, again, far down the call sheet person dictates how much screen time you're going to get. But Milch is unable to resist what he calls an ugly fucking mug in the commentary. Charlie Utter has an ugly fucking mug. Ralph Richardson has an ugly fucking mug. So he would have had scenes, and his most likely scene partner was either Jewel or Aunt Lou. So we just didn't get her in that bargain. There's no theater troupe. There's no Jari, which I think probably... Dan is around. Aunt Lou is around. It would have made a lot of sense for Jari to be around.
I think he like would come and go. I forgot he even existed.
Yeah, you'd think that for a big political thing, he would have been in the show.
Yes, and to stand next to a senator, he would have been into that as an opportunity, especially when that senator is George Hearst. And he was just a great toady character as well that makes the guys on the wrong side of history, I guess you could say. More pleasurable to be around, like your Con Stapletons, like your Leons, like Cy Tolliver most of the time. You need those guys on her side. So it's not just plotting and Mr. Burns excellenting your fingers together all the time. You need someone to be a moron and incompetent, and Jari fits that bill. Did we miss the theater troupe?
No.
I miss Jack Langreish, certainly.
I mean, yeah, but no.
But no, yeah. that's fair.
Fine.
That's
totally fair. It's fine. They moved on. the dynamic, the chemistry between Bullock and Alma is still fantastic. And that's not lost on anybody. And it's just as each one of their scenes together is stressful and emotional still, even though he obviously has a relationship with his wife and his children now. And it's good. I just love where they went with that particular plot.
I never thought for a second it was going to be anything more than like a long look or anything.
Neither did I, but they did it so well every time.
I wish Alma, who I would say was like the third lead on the show, I wish she had more in the movie than There's My Old Boyfriend. Is that unfair?
She's not there. She bought the land. I thought she was fine. She doesn't live there anymore.
She helps everyone out. She's part of the community still.
She doesn't live there anymore, but she has as much business as anybody. She probably makes more money out of the town than anybody.
I mean, she's always been a different class than everybody else, and the only one who could possibly match her this entire time was.
Did she ever seen the Trixie Vault at all?
No, I don't think she did.
Yeah. They talk about, and maybe all actors talk about this, to like make the TV series seem better in retrospect or while it's going on, but like that you would go and be on set while other actors are in scenes that you are not in. Maybe that was going on in the movie, maybe it wasn't, I don't know. She seemed very ancillary in a way that, like, she, again, third lead on the show in its series iteration.
I just when she was there, I felt like it was well done. And it was time for her to leave, and she just left.
Mm.
She's like, there's nothing for me here.
Well, she doesn't actually leave.
Didn't she leave?
I don't think so. No.
Well, I guess she was at the wedding.
She's at the wedding is interrupted. Hearst is beaten in the street. He's put in jail. Harry Manning is killed. End of show.
I thought she left in the middle of the wedding, though, right?
I don't think so.
She walked out with Sophia.
I don't know, maybe.
About to rewatch.
Yeah, they're certainly not staying at the gym in the fuck rooms. this brings us to our next Cruel Masquerade. Going to be hers this time, and Shane is going to be everyone's favorite.
Get that
Evie Farnham. Get that frog out of his throat, so we can put it right back in.
All
right. Okay, Shane's doing some stretches.
Yeah.
He's muted his microphone. He's
trying
his ABCs and his. Supercalifragilistics and all that. Just, yeah, getting ready.
Drying my hands.
Sure.
They are damp.
Okay, all right. Here we go, I'm going to start. A word with you, Mr. Farnham. Property of mine fell victim to arson last night.
So, Senator, I gave you to understand. What dreadful news.
Place this lumber order. The vendor is in lead. Tell the man weekly deliveries until further notice.
By telegraph, sir?
There is a public telephone just outside. Take the leap, Mr. Farnham. The future awaits.
The queue, sir, stretches. Have you seen the riffraff line up?
Stall progress he may, stop it he cannot. Every business, Mr. Farnham, in this territory thrives as a direct result of communication. Now, we've no say as to the pace of modernity's advance. I myself am merely its vessel, a humble foot soldier. Its inevitability is its deepest truth. What is wrong with you, goddammit, to be shifting your feet so incessantly?
The procession of years. Wanton leakage.
You are a vile creature.
Nor are you the first to say so.
Get the hell out and place the call.
I'll detain you for the briefest moment.
Now.
Yes, sir, going.
Great. Well done. We did good there. out of arm space for these roses. I am being pricked by thorns. you can't have a Deadwood reunion without Milch writing a scene for William Sanderson as a vile creature, as Hearst said.
This is fantastic. We were laughing out loud.
He likes,
the wanting
he likes making fun of that character more than any other on the show, no question. Of course, the famous EB anecdote, William Sanderson anecdote, is that Milch would torture him with last-minute monologues, which EB would hide in his hat. And you can see some of that on screen if you look really close. Constant fear of losing his job, Bill Sanderson.
He wasn't really in that back half of the movie very much, and that was...
I think he more or less, he would not be invited to that wedding.
Right.
I think he kind of fulfills his duty once he tells Bullock about the bushwhackers going after the general.
I'm glad that he does finally get one small sliver of something good that he actually did, or almost courageous.
Sure. Like, it's not unreasonable back in the series that, like, and he does. Like, he does play, like, a someone's, like, he runs interference for Trixie as she's going upstairs to shoot. That was cut out of the flashback, but he does cause a commotion while she's going upstairs. So the last thing that I want to talk about is about Trixie. We were watching, again, with Blair, and I agree. Like, she is up and mobile very, very fast, and I think some of that is due to this movie pretty clearly being two episodes spliced together. Like, Bullock burning the lumber is end credits, old-timey song. And then you wait a week for the next episode. In the intervening week, you would forget that Trixie just had a baby in the 19th century, and she's, like, tying herself up with corsets in the morning to go do this and do that. It's not necessary for Trixie to have just had a baby. I don't know why they couldn't have had a baby right then. I don't think you get anything out of Trixie being pregnant in that moment, which leads me into my next bullet point.
Are you, hold on, John, are you mad at that there's a new character, the baby? Baby's
name? I mean, the show or the movie understands if you're going to have a new character, don't give them lines. And I think the baby executed in that way admirably.
Time.
You know, that's like background. People are talking over it. So I really don't feel it's necessary for Trixie to have just had a baby. And I think that her on the balcony yelling at Hearst is supposed to be read as like an instigator towards his more reckless behavior. And that somewhat boils all down to pregnant women to be crazy, which is beneath the show.
Trixie says it as a weak excuse as to why it did, why she did what she did, but
it's beyond reckless. It's beyond reckless.
What was reckless about it? Oh, what she says?
Yes. Yeah. She
hates the guy, and then she's being relegated to a room and can't be active and can't
do anything. The perception stops. I'm not saying Trixie wouldn't do it necessarily. She's a reckless character for the most part. And that's in keeping with what Bullock's going through, and that the reintroduction of these characters are causing him to regress, potentially regress. But as far as like instigating incidents, Hearst coming into camp potentially could be an instigating incident. But this specifically puts him in a state of mind to where I have been had. A trick was played on me, and I'm going to exact true justice, or at least how I interpret it. Or I'm going to use the threat of that true justice to extract something from Al that I don't get in any way, and which goes away as well.
Right. I always took it, Hearst, with the Jen thing as a lie agreed upon with that. I think he always knew. But it didn't matter.
I don't think it matters.
Because
I also think that Hearst doesn't care about individuals.
Right.
And like Trixie distilling herself down to her sexual parts and thus distracting Hearst in that moment would allow him to not recognize the actual assassin. So I bought all that. And then it was too much. It was too reckless. I feel like there were better ways into instigating incident than very pregnant Trixie yelling this thing and then immediately going into labor and then again up and about. in Blair's telling, and I want to accurately represent her disagreement, like, it's that you would, and I feel like I brought this up myself, not around pregnancy, certainly, but around other things, like, when you depict pregnancy and giving birth as such a, or something like that, as such a easy, no problem thing that you can be up and about, like, for a certain subset of consumers of culture, that's what you think about pregnancy, and then everyone that doesn't do that is a malingerer. You have some level of responsibility to depict biological processes honestly.
And like, all right, I'll just this is the one thing I'm a hand wave in this movie. Maybe this keeps it from being an A plus. This was obviously supposed to be something that was 2 to 3 to 10 episodes long this whole season, so we had to smash it together. Maybe you need to get rid of the pregnancy. I don't know. And I don't know. Maybe there's a director's cut somewhere that's a little different. And I hope there is.
I think the wedding is important. They think Trixie thinks her life is in danger. Let's get married just in case things go badly. That is good and right. I don't think the pregnancy adds anything. I don't think her outlook is necessarily changed by having this baby around. I think she's more or less exactly the same to the same person.
It kind of tamps the down a little.
But it keeps her inside. I mean, otherwise she'd just be out roaming around. I thought it was fine. I mean, I can see the unrealisticness of, you know, being up and about at 100% the day after, but I didn't take her at 100%. And there are some women who recover very quickly. It's a very small percentage, yeah, but
a whore of her vintage is probably a little different down there than most women. That's offensive, sorry.
Trixie, in her own admission, has, oh God, I've tied off 6 or 7. I don't know. She said she's had a lot of abortions, basically. So whether or not they were necessarily, I want to say, not knowing about 19th century obstetrics, probably making birth a little more difficult. Just another thing of her age, which she's probably in her mid to late 30s by this point. So, again, yeah, it's just I shouldn't be asking these questions. I shouldn't be asking them. I should just be along for the ride. The show or the movie takes this huge logical leap and invites that questioning and therefore the breaking of the movie.
It didn't bother me. I moved past it and actually told you guys to shut up because
you
I want to watch the
I
movie.
I don't understand that.
I just want to watch something in its entirety.
I'm all about discussion.
If there's anything that this Game of Thrones has kind of caused, it's watching it in groups and having to press pause to discuss things.
That's brilliant.
It really increases my anxiety.
When the show is bad, I don't mind that. I'm not saying the WWE is bad. It's not. It's great. But the show sets the standard. Game of Thrones, when it's being silly, invites criticism of a funny type. Especially if you're in a big group. I didn't have any problem with that either.
Yeah.
It was like talking about stuff. Like, why are we doing any of this? We like to talk about culture, cultural output.
I don't want a 5-minute break. I want to watch it and then review it as completed whatever.
I agree with Shane and not John.
All right. Fantastic.
Thank you. It's so stressful, Brian.
It is. When Chelsea talks to me during movies, I always tell her, just wait, we'll find out.
Yes.
I say it as fast as possible so I don't miss anything.
Maybe it'll pay off. I don't know.
I will say that there is a distinction between talking about what is going to happen versus talking about what has just happened.
We stop to criticize. This is what I was criticizing the whole. You criticize every scene, then. I don't know how you enjoy something.
One day I'm going to read A.O. Scott's book, Better Living Through Criticism, and I'm going to get that tattooed right next to my Hearst portrait. I feel like has prevented me from getting me more jobs. Or a future job. I don't know. Things seem to be going okay. I do work night shifts now, so maybe no one's too concerned. I wear t-shirts to work. Yeah. I'm 36. 35, excuse me.
Oh, boy.
Anything else for the Deadwood movie?
I wanted to you cut me out on the good scenes that you wanted to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
When we go from they grab Wu's grandson,
mm-hmm.
and Bullock starts chasing them. From then through the standoff on the balcony, I friggin' love the stand. Like I didn't know who was gonna die. You're like, yeah. Somebody's going to die. Somebody's going to get shot. I'm terrified of what's about to happen. And then the standoff on the balcony, I loved it. That was great movie making.
I actually thought nothing was going to happen because that's usually Deadwood. Everyone stands off and right. Someone figures it out. And that is not what happened. So it was kind of fun. It was definitely more of a movie than the show.
That's a telling statement. I interpret that statement negatively. More of a movie than a television show. Meaning that movies have to have more instance.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the foundation of my not being whole hog behind this movie. Is that it's not. It's not a movie. It might have longer end credits that look like movie end credits. It might not have it previously on, but it is a TV show. It is episode 37 of a TV show.
I did not.
That tilting towards a more cinematic, action-oriented result is not in keeping. The series ends with two armies not firing a shot against each other, and it is a victory that everyone is spared.
This is a movie. I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm able to compartmentalize.
I haven't heard any reviews or anything. My initial impression is that people are fawning. Like, people love this.
Yeah.
And, I mean, more Deadwood is great. That's hard to argue with. But I'm eager. I'm eager to start reading reviews and potentially having my mind changed. Maybe these are being acknowledged.
Did you guys enjoy how they kind of gave everyone a little bit of lines here? Did it bother you that Con Stapleton was the minister? I loved it.
No.
It was fine.
I love Con Stapleton.
Yes. Thank you.
He could have been the new prostitute, and I would have gone along with it.
a little sad he didn't have the tight pants. The
character whose name I don't remember had more lines combined than Con Stapleton, Aunt Lou, Dan Doherty, and probably three or four more other characters.
Yeah, that is, yeah, it's, yeah. Could have spent a lot more time with Dan. I thought it was a perfect amount of Con. That's perfect. That was great. Just missing the pants. That's it.
A minister doing his very best to not be anti-Semitic at a Jewish wedding. Yeah, great. Perfect.
And Garrett Dillahunt gets in here?
Yes.
Fantastic.
And Leon was supposedly in there too. The actor who played Leon.
I didn't see him.
But Garrett Dillahunt, he did have to be pointed out to me. But it's impossible to not see.
It's so great.
And again, like, I did not realize for the entire second season that was Jack McCall playing Wolcott. So maybe I just don't have an eye for faces. Maybe I'm.
You're fucking George Hurst.
Sociopath.
Again. Your tattoo.
Maybe the earth is talking to me. Maybe this is like a Twilight Zone episode.
You should quit your job and start go out mining somewhere.
Maybe. I assume I'm just going to know where to go, even after 400 years of excavation. And there's gold in Georgia, probably, right?
Yeah.
That'll do us for this episode of the Munich Movie Club podcast. I'm never going to talk about Deadwood again. It's not the plot can't continue. It's in a place where it kind of should, but I don't know. In another 10 years, Bullock will have met Teddy Roosevelt, and they'll be best friends. And Al's dead, so who wants to go revisit this series without Ian McShane? I guess you don't know
Milch,
that he's dead.
Here's what's gonna happen: Milch dies. HBO needs some content. Ghost Al.
Nice. Hearst gets a dragon.
Yeah.
He was in the Black Hills all along. Yeah. That's what. Yeah. It wasn't the gold.
Sir Drogon laid his eggs.
Yeah, that's why all the gold was there. Dragons hoard gold.
That's well known. That's well known.
Yeah. Check us out on the internet, MunichMovie.club. And like us on Facebook at Munich Movie Club. Follow us on Twitter at Munich Movie Club. Thank you for joining me tonight, guys.
Thanks, John.
All right, yeah.
Have a good night.